Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. Greetings from my car. But actually, I'm not driving. I'm parked in my driveway. Very confined space. I just about fit my car into the... I have like a back patio that has a rear entrance for a car, but it's very narrow. I just about fit my car in. It's one of the great stresses of my life. Every night, pulling this in and getting it to within a couple of millimeters of the front wall so that when the back gate closes, it doesn't close on my car. But, you know, I live in Rialto. We've had a history of vandalism in our hood, and it's just way better to get the car in the back. Not that you needed to know that, but that's where I'm sitting. Just about to take off to head to a cafe to finish the final bit of editing on this very episode, and I thought, let me do this first in a quiet space and introduce great episode that's coming up with Stephen Mullen, previous guest a few weeks ago. As I had said back then, I had intended to get Steve as a regular guest. Just the way the last couple of months have worked out, that hasn't been the case. However, that is definitely going to be more the case. In fact, I can announce, even though I do repeat this with Steve at the end of the episode, that both Steve and Joanne McNally are now coming on board as regular contributors to what was the Des Bishop Podcast. We will be renaming it, which myself and Steve joke about at the end of the ep. Anyway, today's episode, I mean, it's largely about masculinity and I guess about male friendships. The topic was inspired by the fact that Steve told me to listen to a Guardian podcast that discusses masculinity, which of all these sort of modern looks at masculinity, I found it so far the most interesting because I've only watched 3 episodes. And this is really sort of part one of at least 2 episodes where we'll discuss masculinity. But Steve had recently also done something with the Dublin Boys Club. So we discussed that in a lot of detail early on. Then we move on to a bit more of a chat about male friendships and then on to a look at the topics that were coming up in this Guardian YouTube series, actually, with Iman Amrani, and it's interesting, but it's really only the beginning of a chat. I want to watch the rest of it before we discuss it all, and that's it, really. Just for those that are looking to come to shows, Mia Mama on sale all over the country. Make sure you check out Steve at Hello Stevo on Instagram if you're looking for stuff of his. I'm in Athlone tonight. There's a few tickets left. And then there's no tickets left for any of my shows until I'm in Cavan at the end of the month. So here is myself and Stephen Mullen talking about masculinity, male friendships, and the Dublin Boys Club.
Boom, boom, boom. A, B, C, D, E. Is that good?
Yeah, we're recording. Talking like that?
Yes.
Well, your voice is so deep.
Mm.
I interviewed Jess Brennan in here yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know who she is?
No.
She's one of these... Well, sorry.
I saw the picture. I saw a picture and I was like, she's not an accountant.
She's not an accountant. Nah, she's cool. She's really interesting. She's involved in liberated club culture.
Oh, right.
You know, pretty out there club nights where there's a freedom in your behavior.
Yes.
And... I chatted to her for next week's episode of The Shift.
Nice.
So she was sitting there where you're sitting yesterday. So yesterday was a much better day than today. No, I'm just kidding. But if you follow her on Instagram, she's pretty wild.
Check her out, yeah.
Yeah, she's wild on the Insta in a fun way.
Yes.
And, you know, she puts it out there. No shame attached. So that's the next episode of The Shift. But anyway, I was just laughing at the difference in...
the frequency. The frequency of the voice. It's a lower frequency. You got a good voice, actually, Steve.
I do. Yeah, I would. I'd love to. Yeah. Now, when I do listen to a back doing podcasts and stuff like that, I wouldn't mind having an old doing a bit of radio in the nighttime. Like, do you know when we drive home late night from gigs, and those late night shows.
That voice.
Yeah, that voice.
But I do find though that voice that you're talking about, or that feeling, because you at least do the intros on your own, right?
Mm.
So I find that too. Like, I'm doing the intro on my own. I got the headphones in, and it's just me. So you're kind of calm.
Yeah.
And that you almost feel like you want to portray this calmness, you know? So you almost get into it a bit, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And then you start listening, you know, you're editing, you're listening to your own voice, and you become very conscious of how your voice is coming out, you know?
Yeah. And worrying about gaps and, is that too much silence?
Yes. And the sound of your mouth.
Yes.
And breathing. It gets very ASMR, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, two male voices here in the Des
Bishop.
Two masculine voices here in the Des Bishop podcast.
Yeah. Do you consider yourself masculine? I got asked that recently. It's an interesting... I never really think about it.
Well, I think... By the way, listeners, today's topic of conversation is masculinity. Mm. This isn't just a random moment that happened. But I think, well, masculinity as a term is very loaded. But when somebody says, are you masculine? I think that feminine has become more defined in modern culture because there was a need to define it in terms of women battling for equality. Whereas masculine, I guess, is... perhaps not as defined, or actually I think is currently in more flux.
Yes.
I think it would have been easier to answer that question 100 years ago.
Mm.
So yeah. If somebody says to me, are you masculine? Yeah, I definitely would say I'm masculine. But I think a lot of times when people discuss masculinity in a way that's like, he's quite masculine, but there's like a tone on that.
Yeah,
like
there's a negative tone there.
I think what they really mean is kind of more like machismo.
Machismo.
You know, just
yes,
that sense.
Macho boy.
Yeah, or sometimes you'll hear the word hyper masculine. You'll never hear the word hyper feminine, though.
Yeah.
But you'll hear hyper masculine, mm-hmm. as if somehow too much masculinity ain't a good thing.
Too much testosterone. You'll hear that a lot.
Yes, too much testosterone.
Yeah.
But there is, funnily enough, Matteo Lane, this gay comic that's a good buddy of mine, but he was on the shift. Actually, he was on Des Bishop podcast too. He had pointed me to this great New York kind of eccentric. She was doing some talks, but she basically puts everything down to testosterone. That's like why all the good and the bad of men is testosterone. And she basically says that men get too much of a hard time because they have to fucking deal with this shit, you know?
I definitely agree with that. I definitely agree with the. I was telling you I went for a walk in the mountains recently with the Dublin Boys Club that Mazer organized. You know, the street art.
Oh yeah, that was interesting. Actually, that's a good starting point actually for this conversation.
Well, I just found it. I got asked to go randomly with my mate who's a poet, and
as all conversations. just for all our listeners who have normal lives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't tune out just yet. Don't tune out just yet. The normalness with which you said, I went with my mate who's a poet.
My mate's a poet, you know. Poet up in Arbor Hill, you know. But he randomly followed, he follows Mazer, and I actually missed the post. But he basically put it out there for everybody to go and join a group of men to go for a walk in the Wicklow Mountains, and it was the poet Jeff who said to me, do you want to come down, very randomly. I think he sensed that I could do with something like that. Like, I don't, for example, I didn't know this was an issue maybe till afterwards, but I don't live in a very masculine home, let's put it that way. You know, I live with two girls, and it's very, you know, it's great, it's a girl's
but
time.
But do you think he was making that judgment, or do you think
I don't think he was making that judgment, but I think he felt that I needed a bit of brother time, you know, a bit of hanging out with guys time, a bit of doing something positive for myself.
But regardless, it's a good thing to do.
Absolutely, yeah. And so apparently boys clubs have started in different parts of the world. I think they started one in Berlin first. I think that's where Mazer got the idea from. And basically, we met up in the car park of Glendalough, on the upper car park there. And basically, 30 strangers. We didn't know each other. And Mazer Combs, he introduced himself, and he laid out the rules, which were interesting. And straight
but
away,
but they weren't his rules, right? This was a kind of a.
These are kind of the rules of the club, basically.
That has become that, which is pan international, like, you know.
I think so. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're very.
Yeah, but it's basic. Almost like AA kind of a thing.
Kind,
of,
yeah, yeah.
You start your own meeting, but we have this list of things that we suggest are going to make this work.
Yeah, and one of the rules, well, the first rule was like, no women. We love them, but this is a male thing.
Which is fair enough.
And number two was interesting, which was no banter. And he explained that. He said, what I mean by that is there's no taking the piss. There's no putting each other down kind of thing for the crack.
Yes.
We're here to spend a positive time together. And then the third rule was.
Rule two at the end, it says, so basically becoming a better person means no crack. Sorry, was that again? I just broke the rule. Yeah. I've just broken fucking rule number two here.
I think it's that in terms of if
no, I totally get it. I'm actually joking. I get it. Because,
breaking the rule test.
Well, first of all, we're having the fucking banter all the time. So yes. This is basically a time where we're going to say, we're going to take that out just in case it's getting in the way of some of the shit.
Well, because we communicate in banter. Men, we generally do communicate in the crack and taking the piss.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's not just male. And I think Irish people excel at that. But I think Irish women also can communicate in the banter. But in terms of this, I do think that men do have a slaggy kind of a normal way, which I think at times is probably hiding some stuff. So I'm joking and I'm with you 100%.
And then rule number three was basically to try and talk in terms of instead of we or you or they or all that kind of stuff, which again encourages you to be real, to kind of go, you know,
no, I like that.
Thinking this, or I'm struggling with that, or blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, because look, when I've done therapy, the therapist has often said, because you'll say something like, you know, some people, and then he'll be like, what do you mean some people? What do you think?
Yes.
You know, because sometimes you can sort of give yourself a degree of separation from what you're saying.
Yes,
which can keep you separate from how you really feel.
And in terms of, like, I was thinking of that in terms of stand-up there. I was talking to a guy recently. He's like, he would encourage me to go to I. What do you think of that? Or what are you feeling about that? In order for a premise or a bit that you're working on, don't, it's kind of sometimes too easy to go like, women do this, men do that, and blah, blah. But you have to go, what do you think of it, Stephen? You know?
Which is good. Yeah. Sometimes it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good to do both. In comedy, it's good to do both. But I think in terms of this, it's such a great rule that he had, you know, about the eye. Because it goes from basically an opinion to how you feel.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, like, you can't really get away from how you feel when you're talking about the eye, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's good. It forces
you. And you find yourself in the first hour, like I got talking to a guy straight away who... And straight away you're trying not to, you find yourself laughing, oh, sorry, you know, or whatever. You're trying to be truthful to why you're there. So we're trying to, in the conversation, to not take the piss, and you're kind of catching yourself. But you find yourself very quickly getting into conversations almost immediately, like 5 minutes in after where you're from and all that kind of stuff. You find out very quickly why this guy is on the walk, or what he's struggling with, or what his dreams are for the next year, or, you know, even why you're there on the walk. It's like, why are you here, kind of a thing? Why are we doing this thing together? And it was a really positive experience because it was quite a hike. We did, like, I think it was one of the guys counted, it was something like 12K with quite a climb and stuff like that. We kind of took a break to have lunch at the top of the mountain and came back down again, and genuinely tired afterwards. And there was something in that when I got home, I realized I needed to be up there in the fresh air. I needed to be exhausted. I needed to be exerting myself and letting out the testosterone. And do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but just out of curiosity, that's the experience that you had. But had you guys just decided to have like a coffee morning and spent 2 hours, which was also with the same rules?
Absolutely.
Perhaps, well, you know, you may have also had an experience.
Yeah, and
I was going to say I like the concept of creating a space where we're just going to do things a little bit different.
Yes. And I mean, that was just what they did on this Dublin Boys Club. It's not always a hike. It'll be meeting up in his artist studio or something, or they're thinking of something, maybe going and building something together sometime, or, you know, all sorts of different ways. It might be a coffee morning, et cetera.
Yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah.
Now,
just out of curiosity, was Mazer, like, you know, you knew you were going and what you were hoping to get out of it, but was Mazer clear on why he thought this mattered? Did he say this is because, you know, men are struggling or, you know.
He didn't. Do you know what? That was interesting. It was that kind of, those kind of things seems to be a given. It was never said, but it kind of, I think there was a general vibe of we need to be doing something positive together. And that was kind of it.
Right.
There was no other agenda. I was a bit wary of something else coming out. Do you know what I mean? Of like, this is the men's rights group or something.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, I was worried that's, or there'd be one nutter who was on that kind of vibe that nobody else was on. But it wasn't at all. And I subsequently, by the end of the walk, ended up talking to a couple of other guys who have been doing this kind of stuff in various different groups for years. And that they really, you know, it's kind of a thing. It's their community. It's their getaway. It's their, one of them was doing a sweat lodge in the States. I don't know if you heard of this. Have you done it?
I've done all that. I've
never heard of any of this stuff. I'm brand new to it.
Sweat lodges. I've done sweat lodges. I've done a sweat lodge not that far from where you were having your little
walk. Really? Okay.
Yeah. The sweat lodges are fun.
Yeah.
The problem with sweat lodges is... there's somebody at my door, which always makes me nervous.
Oh, TV license.
Oh, no, I have my TV license paid. But Aiden will get it.
It's okay.
I don't like it. You just never know. You know, I've been getting letters with just Des Bishop Comedian Ray Alto.
I saw that, yeah. I saw that in Instagram. That is funny.
But anyway, sorry. I like the sweat lodge stuff and all that. But at the same time, there can be a little bit of mumbo jumbo. That's
I heard there's a bit of chanting or something going on, isn't there?
It's all a bit of crack. But here's the problem with sweat lodges. One of the people that was a contributor to the book The Secret.
Oh yeah.
Somebody died in one of his sweat lodges because the problem with the sweat lodges is it's a Native American thing.
Yes.
Right. And the problem with the sweat lodges is that you get these people who give way more credit to a sweat lodge than it deserves for the fucking spiritual experience that you're having.
Yeah.
When in reality, most people are just fucking dehydrated and they can't breathe.
Yeah.
And it's fun. Like going in a sauna is fun. It's really fucking nice. But different people, different fitness levels, some people need to fucking go out and breathe.
Yes.
But this guy was pushing that, you know, you need to work through that.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes people can suggest that something is some sort of spiritual blockage when in actual fact it's just the need for oxygen.
It's just too hot, yeah.
Which I believe has also happened with hot yoga sometimes. But anyway, long story short, the guy fucking died.
Jesus.
So I'm not completely dismissing sweat lodges. And when I did it, I did enjoy it. It was a fun experience. It was also a male thing. It was just guys. It was actually a therapist that I was working with at the time was very into the male space.
Yeah.
And all that. But this is quite long. This is well over a decade ago.
Okay.
But... you know, we were doing them and the experience was positive. However, I doubt, to be honest, other than the bonding, if there's much going on with the sweat lodge, other than like it's a bit of crack, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, those things you can take it. Okay, so sorry, pinch of salt.
Yeah. But that aside, what kind of conversations were you having with these guys? Because we got a double distraction there, the door plus that.
I had, nothing too massively deep or meaningful, but it was just a space to be able to express, to be honest with you, I suppose it is a safe environment, but there was no fear of judgment. There was no fear of anybody laughing at you or feeling stupid because you thought something. And like, I had a conversation with one guy who I didn't realize till afterwards. He's a lot younger than me, but he had aspirations to be an actor, you know? And it was this big, huge dream for him. And there was all these blockages as to why he wasn't doing it. And he was, you know, 20, 25, 26, and he hadn't done anything about it kind of thing. And I was able to, from my perspective, go to him, you know, I'd never done any acting by the time I was your age. And my first scene in a movie was a Juliette Binoche. Do you know who that is? No, but she won an Oscar for The English Patient. And he's like, wow, what the fuck? So I'm not saying that there's luck involved in a lot, but you can just go and do it. You know, there are places. And I was able to encourage him and kind of go,
yeah,
there's places that you can go and you can do an acting class. And, you know, these things are just, to him, he wouldn't even know about that. It was just a dream. He saw people on TV and thought, I'd like to do that. But as opposed to, I was able to make that little connection in between where I go, you know, this place is acting classes. Here's the phone number for the guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So that leaves him with a positive experience of you know, not really. He was in a position where he'd just come back from Canada and didn't really know what he was going to be doing with his life yes, he has a good job. He's got the girlfriend, somewhere to live. But definitely a sense of feeling a little bit like, you know, a bit lost, but not depressed
you came in
or anything
and
like that.
Fucking probably just ruined his life. Now he's going to go fucking act, make no money. Turn into
like,
a fucking narcissist.
To do it as a hobby and kind of go, look, you can explore that. That's an interesting thing to go and explore.
But did you have any discussions? Did anybody open up like on more, heavy stuff?
Nothing.
I mean, I know it's just introductory.
Yeah, nothing huge. No, nothing. It was more about, I think this particular one was more about getting to know people.
Yeah.
And it was, I was,
everybody seemed to be sort of from the creative space. Was that kind of
mix little bits and pieces? No, there was a lot of guys who were just in general, who were just in working lives, and just wanting to bond with other men. I think
there was definitely
a few people who have never experienced anything like this before. So I would, and this is a complete judgment, but I would assume they've never been on football teams or basketball teams before.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? They were probably studious, did well in college, moved on and are in good jobs, but have never experienced, you know, a male bonding kind of thing like this. So there's definitely a group of people that were there like that. And then there was definitely lots of people who were older than me, successful in their own rights and what they're doing, but maybe feeling a bit... again, they don't have their own families or stuff like that.
Right, right.
And so this is their kind of family type of thing as well. So yeah, it was all pretty introductory and just meeting fascinating people who had experiences from all over the place. That was really cool. Just you're meeting really cool people, you know.
And there was no underwriting sort of ethos that was sort of percolating underneath. Yeah,
no, because this was the second thing that the Dublin Boys Club had done together. So it's still in its really early days. So there was just, what the underwriting thing I felt was like there was just a general excitement, actually.
Right.
General people were happy to be there and cool, what are we going to do next kind of a vibe, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Felt like you're the Little Rascals or something like that a little bit. There was a little kind of boyish excitement about it. And
did you keep connections with anybody?
No.
Because that's the thing about AA. I mean, not that this stuff is similar to AA or NA, but there's certain similarities in terms of, like, you're in a place, you're supposed to be honest. Obviously, not everybody follows the rules, but, you know, there's, like, a motivation to get honest with yourself, to share with other people, like-minded people, blah, blah, blah.
And I do have to do that because I'm terrible at that, bro. I don't have mates. That's what I was talking about recently. Well, I don't have friends. Like, I don't, like, if I had something I was generally struggling with, I wouldn't really call anyone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's
I was going to say that's a big thing. Like in all the different journeys that I've gone on in terms of trying to like figure out what makes me tick and, you know, sort of getting liberation from whatever the fuck is holding me back.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it has been, you know, stepping outside my comfort zone with other people.
Right.
Being honest, making connections.
Okay.
Because the meditation, all that stuff is really important.
Yeah.
Particularly around emotional balance. But in the end, you do have to take risks. Like, it's almost like a lot of the stuff that people push for your mental health, which I think is all extremely important, is really training for life.
Yeah.
And life happens out in the field, you know, and I think genuine breakthroughs often happen in your relationships with other human beings, not just because obviously you have a partner, you have a child, incredibly important relationships, but particularly around masculinity and just like general well-being, because you've been honest on this podcast before about your own struggles, as have I, you know, a lot of those breakthroughs come from action, not just from introspection, meditation.
It's like nearly that's the first part of it, isn't it? All that introspection, the meditation, the kind of self-analyzing is like part one. And then part two is you kind of have to put yourself out there.
Well, especially because like even with therapy, like therapy can be tough.
Yeah.
Therapists can have to keep challenging you for you to get to a place where you're actually being honest about something. But it's not the same intimacy as opening yourself up to a person, beginning to build a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't have to be long term, but there is something about that vulnerability and that connection that can, you know, you can find meaning in it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about that today. I mean, the therapist, and I'm like, I know I'm not good at that at all. I don't put myself out there. I think it's probably like a symptom of like I moved around a lot.
Mm.
So I was like in six different schools, I think, you know, so I don't have a connection with like anyone from any of the schools that I went with now. I always moved away from being in the gang you know what I mean? I always wanted to, I was in the gang when I was in the teams and all that, but I didn't want to be defined by the gang. Do you know what I mean? But like, I look at my brother, he's literally bought a house back where, next to the school that he grew up in, back where all his mates are, where they're all having babies at the same time. They're all married at the same time. That's his gang, you know, that's his family, you know? And I've always kind of moved away from that. But I see the need to be vulnerable, to have to, because you have to connect. We're built to connect. You have to connect.
I mean, I'm similar to you in that I've moved away from all my gangs. I guess the only difference is because I was so young when I was 14 when I came here.
Yes,
but I wasn't with my family.
Yeah.
And no matter how dysfunctional your family was or how dysfunctional my family was, I didn't have that to go back to. So I find myself quite good at assimilating and just suddenly getting comfortable with people, not so much intimate sexual relationships. That's my weak point, but my strong point, I have to say, is ending up in quite strong friendships.
Yes,
quite quickly, and being comfortable in them, but also getting a lot out of that. You know,
I've noticed that in the little time that I've known you, that I've been very impressed by that. That we've gotten to meet people through the various different works that we're doing. That the friends and the connections that you do have from fucking ages ago. But you're great. I've noticed that you're great at that. You're great with people. You're great with those friends. You're great at
But they are good friendships, though.
Yes.
But they're good friendships.
But you've maintained them. It's not easy to maintain that over the years, you know?
No. Well, you know, there's certain things that help, like the shared experiences of like golf, fitness.
Yeah.
You know, also like
the school, the lads from Peters and stuff like that. And
yeah. I mean, the Peters guys. Oh, that's right. I forgot that you were
like,
there.
I was there for the whole, like, but I, big family dinner.
Yeah. But that was a reminisce. Like, those connections were deep back in the day. I don't see those people so much now. Right. But those connections were real.
Yes.
You have those real connections too. It's just that perhaps you that's just true. you're either you're not confident or comfortable to be back in one of them and realize that they were profound. Perhaps. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you're you, I'm me.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's not get into, I don't want to get into that, but what I'm saying is that I do find great value in those friendships. Like, they do matter to me. It's not just because I'm not married and I don't have kids, so they're maybe more important than for somebody else who's got a lot going on with their family. But even with my friends, like, our friendships do matter to us a lot.
Mm.
But I have to also say that, like, when I look at my dad, you know, my dad essentially left the life that he had behind when they finally left London. I was born and then they went back to the States almost immediately. The life that my dad had, the friends that my dad had in my lifetime were people that he only met, like, in the 70s. And he was in his late 30s.
Right.
You know? And that's my dad's life. And every now and then he would get a phone call from his old life. But, you know, you have no idea, really, in a way, who your networks will be moving forward. You know,
in 10 years' time, yeah.
Yeah, like when your daughter goes to school. Yeah. Like, you know, like, a lot of my dad's connections were either through sports with us.
Okay.
And, you know, like AA.
Right.
And all that stuff happened in later life.
Right.
So, you know, who knows what yours will be. But I wouldn't be thinking that you have to be defined by your past. But I also, you can't compare because different people have different personalities.
Yeah.
Some people don't need the same amount of friends, you know?
I think that is you're right. Some people don't need, and there is definitely an element, there must be an element in the two of us where we thrive on isolation as well because of the work that we do.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love the isolation.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. That's the other issue.
Yeah, I love the isolation, totally. But you got to be careful with the
exactly.
isolation because it can be dangerous.
Yes.
Because you're in company with your fucking biggest enemy, your own head.
Yeah. It's so true.
You know, because you know, because your head is lying. Like, that's all like language from the early recovery for me. But like, what you learn, you know, after a while when you fucking start to meditate and you start to fucking watch the mad thoughts and you realize your fucking head is completely unreliable. It only takes a simple memory, you know, like a simple thing of looking back on an experience. Like, even the way you think about a gig that you just did and then you watch it and you go, my perception of what happened and what happened, we're completely wrong.
Right.
Your head is fucking such an unreliable witness.
That's a brilliant tool to have. It's a great tool to teach. So they teach that in AA.
Yeah, but I think they teach that in all. And this is not, listen, I think everything comes from our head. So all this fucking stuff about spirituality and your soul and where the fuck you're feeling, I personally think it's all coming from our brain.
Yeah.
You know? So this is just more of a way to get your head around what's going on.
Yeah.
But like, If your head is telling you something, it does not mean it's the truth. You know, somebody who has an eating disorder, their head is telling them they're a fat bitch. They're deathly skinny.
Yes.
Their fucking head is telling they're a fat bitch.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you can't trust your brain in so many areas. So that that's the only reason that came up is to talk about how isolation can be dangerous, because sometimes contentment just comes from distraction. It's not always fucking spiritual enlightenment.
Yes.
It's just sometimes you're in a bad mood and then you go play fucking football,
yes,
or you get busy and 2 days pass and you haven't fucking sat with your own thoughts for 2 days and you needed that.
Yes.
It's not always
great, yeah,
the meditation and the fucking, you know, because that's what happens. Some guys, like, when they will get very rigid.
Yeah. And they don't want to move on from it.
Well, they feel like, it's like when somebody gets into the gym early on, they can overdo it. Because suddenly they feel like if they're not fucking working out on a day, then they're going backwards. And so you can almost become like, you try to be the best person on journey of self-discovery that's ever been made. And every day is like, how can I better myself? But in actual fact, that's dangerous too, because what happens is you stop journeying and you just become like obsessive, you know?
Yeah.
And that's actually more of a hiding than you realize. But that's part of the journey too, of discovering that and going, oh shit, you know, I've now become, you know, now I'm OCDing on fucking bettering myself.
That's not
healthy either. But you know, that's
all a part of the journey.
Yeah, I think it's all part of the journey. But basically, you know, a lot of people do come to various different realizations when they get to that place.
Yeah, that is a great point though about getting out there and. You have to distract yourself, but getting out there and doing something, you kind of got to get your hands dirty in the world, don't you?
Just
get on with stuff. Just get on with it for the sake of getting on with it. My therapist gave me a great, I love, it's such a simple analogy, but I think it's a great one because of the thing of getting caught in your head sometimes too much. But she said to me, think about when your daughter is running across the room and she falls over. She gets up and she starts running again. And while she's running again, she's not going, I just fell over there. Why did I fall over? I shouldn't have done that. You know, she's not going into this introspective, you know,
yes,
analyzing of herself and blah, blah. She just gets up and keeps going. And there's a certain element of that in what you're saying of like, you just kind of have to keep going and not be overthinking it. You know?
Yeah. Well, analysis paralysis is the other term that, you know, like in terms of all the jargon.
Yeah.
Analysis paralysis. And, you know, if you get jammed up in your head, even about like making new friendships and shit, when you get jammed up in your head, that actually stops you from just experiencing it and just doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's good that came up from that Dublin boys group.
Yeah, I think it was a positive experience and one, like a positive masculine experience, like of just men being together. And there was, you know, you hear the toxic masculinity term thrown around a lot, and there was definitely none of that. And as soon as you tell certain people that you're going to do it, there's you know, certain friends will be like, ugh, a men's group, is it? Do you know what I mean? So the people will just shit on it straight away when it's just like, nah, we just need some time to hang around with brothers, basically, and just do something. And that was good. That was why the conversations came, because we were doing something. You know, we were out there doing something. We were out there slipping and falling on our arses in the mud or whatever, trying to, you know, some lads can't get up this hill, so, you know, I'll see you later and keep them going or whatever, you know. It all works. Conversation flows because you're moving, you know. You're negotiating the path. It was like really icy and slippy up there that day, and that's all part of it. That was the getting out there and doing something that enabled a little bit of introspective kind of thought.
Yeah,
well.
I mean, I've been saying this lately on this podcast, on this shift. I just like that there suddenly is a kind of a mainstreaming of people trying to have a better sense of who they are and advancing their wellness. I mean, I know wellness is like a term that's now getting made fun of itself, but at the essence of wellness is a sense of people trying to figure out who they are. Obviously, there's a lot of mumbo jumbo that goes with it all, but even dismissing the mumbo jumbo can be dangerous in the sense that for every bit of bullshit that goes with it, people find truth even from the bullshit.
Yes.
You know? So anyway, long story short, I don't like to be too dismissive of some of the wellness stuff, because even the most bullshitty parts of it can bring people to discover things that really do work for them.
Mm.
And it's just healthy, you know?
Yeah.
I think whenever it becomes culty, it's unhealthy. But in terms of just constantly trying to better yourself and find out new information and anything. I really think that motivates you to focus on your relationships, focus on your emotional well-being. All these things are positive, you know. That's what I like about that you did this Dublin Boys Club.
Yeah, I think ultimately that's the thing. You do have to take the positive out of it and not to, because I can be dismissive of stuff all the time. So there's definitely, like, I was turning up there kind of going, oh, right, who's the nut jobs here? Like, who's the, but you have to dive in at some point. And yeah, if you're too negative about things, you stay on the outside all the time. And I think that comes back to a part of my upbringing as well, that my father was a preacher. I was brought up in a really religious place that I ultimately rejected on some level. But then you're on the outside of it completely, and I was, you know, so angry about a whole type of person or type of people that you can never find any truth in it at all. But then if you were to meet my dad and the kind of man that he is today and the truths that he's living out in his life, you know, he's a good man. He does good things, you know. He does amazing work for community. There'll be a lot of people at his funeral, put it that way, you know.
Yeah.
But so there, you know, there was a lot of mumbo jumbo, and I did reject a lot of that. But you know, I can't get away from the truth of, you know, I was brought up by a good man ultimately, you know.
Yeah, faith without works is dead, since we're going into the Bible. Book of Romans.
Oh, there, you know? Jesus does. You know more than I do.
No, but I mean, it's such an important thing of whatever about the relationship you had with your dad and all that. And obviously, everyone's got their journey. We all fuck up. We all fuck up. That's a fact. And definitely parents, they fuck up. There's nothing you can do. But the truth is that whatever he believes in, he is out there actively doing good things.
Yeah.
And I think doing those good things create a certain energy. But anyway,
that's shout out to Third Space on Smithfield Square, guys, if you ever want to pop into his cafe there.
That's your dad's?
Yes, my dad's, yeah. Sorry, I need to, because he was on the podcast this week. He, on my one, he is, it's not his, it's a social entrepreneurship.
That's right.
That he started. So he doesn't own it, but yeah, that was his, he started that. Yeah.
Really?
Yes, yeah. There you are now.
There you go. I did not know that.
So that's his.
Very successful one.
It's done amazingly. They opened a second one in Ainge Street that didn't work out, but yeah, Smithfield has been just absolutely booming, and you can see the life and the work that he's doing, and he really had a heart for doing something outside the religious world after he'd finished with that. And yeah, it's just a fascinating, even I found out more about it this week, that like, if it ever does, you know, if it ever does collapse, nobody gets any money from, nobody profits from it. It'll all go back into the money from whatever's left over will go back into community and enterprises.
I never knew
and stuff
that
like
that.
So nobody
Third
owns
Space.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, it's a very, I think it was a New York guy who wrote the book called Third Space. The idea being, you've got your home, you've got your work, you've got your third space.
Yes. I never, and even in the title, I never realized that's what it was. But of course, it makes sense.
And it's
some people say it's what's lacking in the, as we've evolved as a society, you lose that village, you know, you lose that sense of.
That's exactly what he talks about, yeah.
Is that right?
He's creating the village again. He's basically trying to create spaces where it's like what it was, the old country pub here, where you went to the pub because you had to have a meeting with somebody,
yeah.
But you could buy some milk as well and bread on the way home, and you heard the local news and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
that's what he's
and
trying
to. And it connected
to.
You to people. It gave you a connection. Sense of responsibility.
Yeah, change the city around the table is the kind of one of the. One
really of the change pubs. The city around the table. Yeah.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah.
And it's good in the sense that if you can create these urban villages, or certainly this sense of belonging, which I've always thought is what what you lose when religion breaks down. Mm. You lose a sense of belonging, which I think is good because religion was too didactic.
Yes.
But it needs to be replaced, which the internet sometimes replaces with, I think, negative communities.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I like about this concept is you get the urban village without the rigidity of the previous kind of rural village life of the lace curtain and people watching what you do. That there's a certain negativity to that. So I like when you take, I guess, like what we've learned from modern evolution or certain urban living, or certainly if you embrace urban living, you take all the positives from that, but you remember that belonging, sense of community, sense of responsibility to your neighbor.
Yep.
These things are good.
Yeah.
They're like anchors.
Absolutely.
That I think we've lost.
Oh, totally. And I think that I heard Joe Brolly talking on an interview on Joe.e recently when he talks about the GAA and what that means to him. And hearing him talk about the GAA was like, shit, I missed that. I missed that. His whole love of the GAA is that community, is that, you know, we're part of something. We are looking after our neighbor. It can never be professional because it's gone. What GAA means is completely gone. It's about looking after the members of your community. You know, he gave a kidney to a guy, didn't know who he was, but he's in the GAA club. Well, then I know who he is.
Yeah,
another
fucking guy fucking rejected it.
Did he?
I believe so. Yeah, but don't quote me on that. Well, it wasn't, the guy didn't reject it. The guy
it
really
didn't work
wanted
out. Yeah, yeah. The body rejected.
I think so. I think. Yeah. Don't quote me on that.
That's gas.
Well, I agree with that. Other than the professional part, which is a separate argument. But when I was in Connemara doing In the Name of the Father, and I'd played GAA before. I was actually a member of Volunteers in Wexford, but I never really, GAA, I never was really properly involved in GAA Club until I was in Connemara. And it was then that I really appreciated the importance of the GAA and perhaps the lack of credit they get for the service that they provide.
Yes, yeah.
You know, at not much cost to the state, actually. Yeah, you know, mostly sort of funded within its own ranks.
Yes.
And one of the moments was there was just some like under 14s match on. I happened to be driving past. So I just parked, stood out, started watching the match. Next thing I'm talking, no, I'm a member. I'm playing with the junior C and the junior A's and stuff and training with the seniors. But like suddenly I'm talking to people and we're talking about these kids and whose kid is that? And, you know, suddenly you're just involved.
Yeah, yeah.
That I think that is...
It's a great thing. I only lived, unfortunately, for 1 year in Middleton when I played GAA because I didn't go to... I went to a Protestant primary school and then went into secondary school. It was Christian Brothers. So it was just like, why am I playing hurling? And so then I got into it then. But I lived very close to Middleton GAA Club and the summertime was the best thing ever. You just go down there. And you'd poke a ball around in the park, but then a match would start, so you'd watch the match, and you know people are coming and going. It was just complete community. It was just, you get to hang out. The disco was there, you know, all that. You were getting your shift behind the scoreboard in the middle of a game. You know, it was the best, you know.
And obviously not everyone finds themselves belonging within that structure. Yeah. But the great thing about modern society is, I don't think it has to be structured around like a central place, or it doesn't even have to be structured around a sense of identity, or, you know, that's the problem with, like, these people that are like, they're not Irish, you know, like,
yes,
I think that the new structures will be more, inviting to all groups and you can pick your own. But at the same time, that dude, what is it? Johan Hari. I know, like, he just does
Lost Connections. Isn't
He talks a lot about that. That connection is the key to addiction, you know, people in isolation. And, you know, I think he's too simplified, but it does really make sense.
Yes.
Connection, sense of belonging. Yeah. All these things are huge drives.
Meaning in your life.
Yeah. Well, meaning is really what came out of that thing that you told me to listen to, which I almost feel like we should leave for next week because we've already been chatting for quite a while. And I feel like that's a big discussion. But what we originally said we were going to talk about today was based a little bit around, what was her name?
Iman Amrani, I think.
Amrani. Yeah, because I had written Armani originally. I was
I was like,
somebody from the Armani family is talking about masculinity.
Yeah, and I was calling her Imran, but it's like Iman Amrani, and she was on Russell Howard's Good News Show as well there during the week.
I saw that picture. Yeah,
yeah.
But it was good. It's a 6-part series from the Guardian on YouTube about masculinity, which it's the best one I've seen so far.
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest, me personally, I haven't seen anything like a good...
Well, I read that book by Liz Plank, which somebody told me was good, and it was rubbish. I mean, it was literally... It's funny. She makes a joke at the beginning of the YouTube video where she says she's going to talk about masculinity. Any thoughts? And somebody messages her saying, don't be preachy early on. Don't be judgmental because it'll turn people off.
Mm.
And that is exactly what Liz Plank's book does.
Okay.
And it's meant to be about finding a positive masculinity, but all it does is just shit on masculinity for the first three chapters in a way that I have to say, if you're a woman, I got to think it's pretty funny. Like, there was actually some good writing.
Yes.
But a lot of it was just like annoying.
Yeah.
And it was just like almost like unacceptable dismissal of male behavior from a woman, which is fine, except that she said that she wanted this book to be for men, but it was
no,
it
man's going to be reading that and not be angry.
Well, they're going to get angry, which is fine. You know, deal with that anger. I think there's something positive of being challenged and having to deal with that.
Yeah.
But you know that most guys aren't.
Yeah.
And that's not the way in.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she makes a joke about that, but she's clearly, she doesn't do that.
Yeah.
And she starts with Jordan Peterson and kind of like makes an argument about the positive side of what Jordan Peterson is bringing, which is like, I thought it was an interesting way to do it.
The interesting angle on that I found was that what she was saying was everything that you don't think the Guardian is going to say about it. And she's kind of going, oh, I'm like, her number one reaction to going to the Jordan Peterson talk in Birmingham was the amount of women that were there. I was like, wow, you see, you never hear anybody say that. You know what I mean? It's always sold as this other thing. And then she interviews all the people after the comments and they're all Jeremy Corbyn,
like, left-wing
voters. And it's like, so it's not all alt-right people who go to these things, but that's what's being sold. I mean, I have so...
Although, in fairness, like, it's not a fair representation of the Jordan Peterson audience, because I think in the UK, people do go to things in a different way in the UK. I don't think she would have had the same experience had she gone in the States.
Yeah, it might have been different in the US. Yeah,
but at the same time, I don't even want to focus on Jordan Peterson too much because he annoys the shit out of me. But I like that that she was able to find the positive things that people get out of Jordan Peterson. And it really goes back to the argument I just made.
Even
from annoying people, people find positive things.
Yeah. Yeah. There's still a truth in somewhere in the mumbo jumbo.
There's truth in a lot of it. The problem is that he's a polemicist, as she says, and there's a lot of traction in the country.
What's a polemicist?
You know, he comes out with like, you know, he's a preacher of a point of view, I guess. Would that be a good, you know? And he's a what would be another word for it? I mean, he's like a
agenda.
Like a pamphleteer. Anyway, he likes the controversial topics, which you know, drum up all the ire online, which is what gets, you know. And unfortunately, he's been used very often to tackle sort of like very much the battle between the sexes arguments, like equal pay and stuff like that. And that's what I find annoying, because that's like incendiary. But what's positive about him is he's basically saying, he's talking about men looking for meaning, and he rejects the term toxic masculinity, which I reject as well, actually. I fucking hate the term toxic masculinity. It has overtaken masculinity. You mention masculinity and people assume you're talking about something toxic, you know? And I don't deny the negative things that women are saying men are dealing with, which comes from you know, legacy issues of male dominance. I don't actually deny that they're there, but to consider them inherently male traits that are toxic is negative.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's negative. It's not true, and it's also, it doesn't open the conversation to the fact, which I think Iman and Amrani does very well in this, is that you can actually, if there is such a thing as toxic masculinity, the people who are suffering most from it probably are men as well. They're suffering from...
Oh, 100%.
But nobody talks about that. Do you talk about terms of toxic masculinity in terms of oppressing others or of oppressing the women? But like, you know...
Well, when you get into the men's group stuff...
Yeah.
I mean, and that's when it also gets incendiary, which is, it's always... it's not spoken about enough, but I don't have the stats, but I'm not going to compare who suffers more, but the amount of men that suffer from male violence is immense as in,
there was some statistic going on there for the while at the odds of being attacked in the street for a man versus a woman is like, obviously the man is up way more.
That, the problem is that when you get into these comparisons, because first of all, you're not comparing like with like. You're not suggesting that a woman's fear of being raped is somehow unequal to a man's fear of getting a beating.
Yeah.
They're all horrific.
Yeah.
But what people forget is that you don't hear a lot of discussions about how dangerous it is for a man to be out at night,
yeah,
and how easy it is for a man to get the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I guess in a way it doesn't matter if it's worse or if it's not as bad as rape. I mean, I don't even think it's worth describing, but I think being raped is worse. But at the same time, it's just not great to get your ass kicked.
Yeah, it's not great to compare the two. It's like kind of talking about apples and oranges.
Exactly.
Women don't understand. Well, not women don't understand. But I remember having a great conversation with my girlfriend Reese, upon which I realized you're going every day into school ready to fight. Like that's something that she wouldn't have had to deal with at all. Now she was dealing with other things, but from the physical threat of getting into a fist fight in school is a daily battle.
Yeah, it was like a thing that existed.
You know, because at any time you have to be ready to fight back or kick off or defend yourself or blah blah. Like that's there all the time.
And that is the toxicity. Like I I don't know why you have to call that toxic masculinity. I think there has to be some other word which separates it from masculinity.
Yeah.
In other words,
toxic behavior.
Well, yeah, that's why I like macho and machismo, other things that are independent of masculinity, because masculinity and femininity should be equally things that you should cherish, things that you should celebrate. You know?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and I don't that's why I don't like the word toxic on it, but I do think that those things are negative. We grew up with them. They have sculpted us into men that we are today, and some of that stuff that's in us is negative, needs to be challenged, and I'm down with that 100%. That's why I always think, rather than focus so much on what is toxic masculinity, I always think we should focus much more on what is aspirational masculinity, what is fucking masculinity 2.0, masculinity in a world that is completely changed. You know, the world has changed, so totally. it's an adapting that needs to occur.
Yeah, you
know?
You got to be able to talk openly about liking fingers up your bums.
Yeah, all that. But also on a serious note, I think that, you know, having the discussion of what's difficult for us in terms of growing up with fear of violence and all these things, often, though, when you bring that up, people put it into the space of, are you suggesting that, you know, the victims of toxic masculinity, female victims of toxic masculinity, are, you know, they basically, it becomes an us and them thing. But it's like, it's independent.
Different. Yeah.
This is just,
they're different issues.
Yeah. This is just, and it's almost in a way the same thing as when a discussion about feminism rises up, the angry men pipe up, right? You look at the comments.
Twitter.
Yeah. Just look at the comments. The angry men, fuck it. They hate fucking chats about feminism. Even though you have to be an idiot to not see that the majority of these discussions about feminism are valid, you know, like the inequality existed.
Of course.
And, you know, Jordan Peterson can argue all day about fucking equal pay. It's only one of a fucking myriad of issues.
Yes.
You know, that women have had to deal with. And if Jordan Peterson has found some decent formula for saying that, you know, equality of outcome, you know,
versus equality of opportunity.
Yeah. You know, all this stuff. Fine. Okay. But it's actually a small part of the real issue. Okay. So I think it's the same thing when men talk about issues that really affect them and how they can be victims of, you know, macho culture and negative men, you know, that it's almost like we're not allowed to have that space. And that in itself is the essence of the fact that it's not just men that create quote unquote toxic masculinity. It's society.
Yes.
Everybody's in on
that. Yes, absolutely.
Everybody's in on that. And men should also be allowed to have that discussion without feeling like they're weak or without feeling like they don't have a right.
Yeah. The space has to be created. Absolutely has to be created in society for that. Because this is, men for years have been dropping off the face of the earth by their own choice for suicidal reasons.
Yeah, all these stats are
because
there.
Because they're all there. So we got to talk about it. We have to give space somewhere in order to express it. I'm back to the men getting angry about feminism thing. I think if most men really encountered my girlfriend's been reading this book called I think it's just called Red Tent, or The Women in Red Tent. So I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a beautiful novel that I haven't read, but I've just been hearing nonstop about it, and it's excited me. And it's a story of it's like setting in Bible times, and it was all about these women who were like, well, I was talking about brotherhood. It was like a sisterhood of of women who had, when they had babies, they looked after each other because the men couldn't look after them in the way that the women could, because it's nature and nurture, and they know how to look after each other. They've been through the same journeys, and they would go over to each other's tents and cook for them. And if you couldn't breastfeed, for example, milk wasn't coming, well, then another mother would breastfeed your child, and all that kind of sisterhood stuff that is apparently, there's a modern day version of that as well. And you know, that to me was exciting. I was like, wow, that's really cool. You know, I was, when she was telling me all about that, and I can see how my girlfriend lives her life now with her friends who have babies of her age and of her, of the same age, and how they support each other. So one of her friends just had a second baby. So Ian is straight over there. You know, I'll take the other child for an afternoon because I can do that because I'm a mother, because I know how to do that. I can cook for you. I can, you know, you can be there. I'll be there when you're crying because your nipples are sore because of the breastfeeding, all that kind of stuff. And it really creates a bond of sisterhood that is, you know, that kind of feminism, if that's what you want to call it, if that's the same type of feminism, I don't know. But that excites me because it's like, that's a really good, natural, pure connection that is there that has evidently been going on for generation upon generation upon generation. It's kind of in your blood. It's part of your nature. Those things should be celebrated. They're great. And I think,
yeah, but men are definitely challenged by feminism. Yeah, I get there. I get there sometimes myself. I get annoyed, you know.
Yeah, but even I don't know if, like, sometimes I feel with the modern day feminism thing, it can be a bit, I don't know, it can be perceived that it's, you know, it's the young women coming out of the universities or you know, and they're not necessarily connecting to the working classes, for example, or this or the single mothers and stuff like that, and then all that anger starts. It becomes a class thing as opposed to a men versus women thing, and all that kind of stuff as well. And
but that's just a more general problem with modern discourse, because everybody has access to everything. But anyway, in terms of keeping it positive for men, I think this Guardian video thing, which we'll talk about more, you know, because this is just a quick intro to it. Perhaps what we'll do is we'll encourage the listeners to watch it.
It's on YouTube. It's called Modern Mass. You just Google or just search on YouTube Modern Masculinity.
And perhaps we'll revisit it next week and explore it a little bit further, because I actually haven't finished it yet. You know, there's a lot of interviews with the tattooed guy about meaning and stuff. And I'd like to get into that perhaps next week.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just found a way to make sense of it for himself. Absolutely. And, you know, all that is the positive stuff that I think I was talking about with the boys club, and just people just finding a way to make sense of life for themselves. But for this discussion, I think it's good that we just began it, and we can push it a little further. I think she is looking for, you know, ways to portray a positive masculinity, which I think should be where we're at going forward.
Absolutely. She's like it's proper journalism, because she's going in to investigate, and she's not sticking any judgment on it, which is really nice. She really listens, doesn't she? She really lets people talk.
I am happy to say publicly that I think men are shamed way too often in modern day discourse, and it's unhealthy. Despite the fact that I often think that this shame comes from a positive place of trying to improve modern men, it's often done in a way that is negative. It's shameful and actually doesn't motivate change. It actually alienates and isolates.
I mean, and we know that. We can look at the political discourse of the last few years, the way things have shifted in Western society, the way things are. It's you know, you get people angry, they're going to bite back, you know.
Yeah,
and it's not positive.
I don't think it's positive. I do think it's funny that a lot of the discussions I have seen about masculinity have come from women, which is funny to me that, you know, you get these women talking about masculinity, which is actually fine to me, but I just think it's hilarious, because I would never fucking talk about feminism. You know, like I support feminism, try to understand it, but I wouldn't go out to women and say, hey, this is what I think feminism should be.
But I think that's where we're at. That's where we're at in society, is that, like, you know, that's the temperature of society at the moment. I don't think if a man went to the Guardian and said, I want to do a piece on masculinity, they would have gone, nah. But because...
I didn't go to anybody directly. I went to a production company and said, I'd like to do something on masculinity. And I got some suggestions. Now, I didn't pursue it. There's actually an episode from about a year ago.
Right.
On my own, talking about masculinity. But the reason why I did that episode was because actually...
I listened to that, yeah.
I was trying to brainstorm a proposal for a fucking masculinity podcast, actually. Yeah. And I never really, that was just pure laziness on my behalf. But very much what she was doing was kind of like where I wanted to go with it. So I was quite happy to see it. So I want to watch the rest, and perhaps we'll do like a part two.
We can do it, or a little series on certain aspects of it, or we could do
at times.
Yeah.
We don't want to bore everybody.
Sorry, you know? Yeah.
So now we can bring the banter back. What else is going on in your life before we wrap it up?
I'm going off.
Oh, you're on with Joanne McNally tonight.
Joanne, get out to Limerick tonight with Joanne. Yeah, should be good crack down.
Actually, it's probably a good time to point out to our listeners of the Des Bishop podcast that, as I had alluded to a few months ago and didn't get it together, but, we want to make the Des Bishop podcast more sort of, a few regular contributors, not just interviews, because the interviews are hard to organize. But Steve was already on board, but Joanne McNally is also coming on board.
Amazing.
To be a regular contributor.
Good so times.
Joanne's getting a Zoom H6. And she, no matter where she is in the world, she's going to be a regular contributor, because she's basically discovered that when something fucking pisses her off, she wants a place to vent.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it would have been great to have her here for this chat, actually.
Absolutely, yeah. She's in town somewhere.
Too busy this week. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
She did actually tell me she was too busy.
She's doing a photo shoot on her hair and all that.
So essentially, it's going to become like a collective of me, you, and Joanne.
Yeah.
So I'm going to change the name. We'll come up with a name. And
Threesome. No.
Threesome's not bad, but there must be. I bet you there is a fucking Threesome podcast.
Yeah, you know, all the names are out there, all right, but...
But it's not my, it's not my preferred threesome. I prefer two women and a guy.
I thought we were close, man.
No, I get it. Listen, I get it, but that's not the type of boys club. That's the next Dublin boys club.
It's a very different type of boys club, yeah.
Double teaming women. But that's happening, which means that we will be on the regular. I mean... It's been a struggle since I brought this podcast back to keep it going weekly, and I felt like one or two like on my own talking to myself, and I really was like, I was starting to worry, Jesus, it's slipping again, you know. but I feel a good
Definitely with other people on board, it's good to keep the we just talked about it, didn't we, reaching out and doing things with other people. You just got to keep communicating.
Communicating, man. It won't always be so fucking wellness orientated, by the way, just in
not
case.
At all.
That's our just other where
we're at the moment.
We thought about talking about, the reaction to the rise of Sinn Féin, but...
Which is fascinating.
Well, it was a better discussion 2 days ago. It always gets complicated. The minute Sinn Féin get popular, every fucking atrocity from the past gets brought up, so it gets...
Yeah, yeah.
And then it gets difficult to defend.
We
them,
thought you'd heard enough about that, listeners, basically.
Yeah, there's enough of it going on. It gets difficult. But I like Mary Lou. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I'm a Mary Lou fan.
I'm a Mary Lou fan. I have a weird crush on her as
she's
well.
She's your constituency, right?
She's my constituency, and she's also like I went to school like around the corner from her office, basically, in Cabra.
I like Mary Lou. I've always liked Mary Lou.
I used to pull her pints in the teachers' club years ago.
I made the mistake years ago when I was at the West Belfast Festival of saying to two very important members of the IRA, or former members of the IRA, real ones, by the way, not fake ones. Proper members of IRA history, I made the mistake of suggesting to them that I think it would be way better if you let Mary Lou or Pierce Daugherty take over in the South, because Jerry just has too much connection to the past, even though I love Jerry Adams, you know? I got this young Sinn Féin activist behind them fucking giving me the fucking, like, shut the fuck up.
cut.
Literally, he was doing the fingers across the neck, like, cut. He was saying cut, by the way. He wasn't saying you're fucking dead. You're fucking dead.
I think it was a great move. It was a great
show. Yeah, but that was way later. That was way later. And I think I was wrong, actually. I mean, I think she actually had a baptism of fire with the local elections. I mean, it wasn't like a love-in for fucking Sinn Féin straight away when Mary Lou took over. But anyway, they are getting a boost now. But I think they're only getting a boost because people want an alternative. And there's no other real alternative. No. Poor fucking Labour.
Labour, they shot the bed years ago.
Yeah,
I
feel like they're unfairly targeted for what happened. It was such.
I think it's because they went. When they went in the coalition with Fine Gael, I think they people really turned on them for that, didn't they?
No, absolutely. But I don't. You know,
and Joan Burton.
I said at the time, Labour should not go into government. They'd be better off in opposition. But the thing is that was the selfish That was the selfish thing, and it was their demise. But the non-selfish thing was to go into government and do whatever the fuck they could do. It was so limited. But they did it, and they're fucking still paying for it. Whereas Fine Gael never paid for it, and Fianna Fáil didn't fucking pay for fucking it up. So it's really like an unfair demise of the Labour Party, no matter how critical you are of the Labour Party, which is totally fair enough if you're angry with them. But look how much they've suffered compared to the other parties. It's fucking it's irrational.
Decimated.
It is irrational. Yeah. It is irrational. Decimated. But Sinn Féin are filling that hole. And I'm happy enough for Sinn Féin to fill that hole, because I've always felt that, you know, to just continually harp back onto the violence is just counterproductive. Like, even Fintan O'Toole is basically saying, like, the time to just fucking let that go is now. You know? Like people who didn't have anything close to direct connection to the violence seem more incapable of getting over it than people who fucking lost their children. Like, those people have been able to put the past behind them and move forward.
Yeah.
But for some reason, people that have no connection to the troubles, they can't fucking let it go. And it's so strange that in the North they can power share and people just say, this is what we need for progress. But in the South, it's like, no, we're not letting that shit go.
It's hypocritical.
I think it is a double standard.
Totally.
But whatever. You know, I'm not a straight up shinner, so I don't want people getting that impression. However, I am content with them having a larger share. However, I still do have a reservation that they will be good in government.
You think that Sinn Féin will be good in government?
I don't actually know. I don't actually know if they'd be good at it.
I think I like the shake up. I think it does all need a shake up. I like a shake up. So I
know,
so
but all I want, I want the policies of the Social Democrats, but with
a conservative government leading those
no,
policies.
No, I just want I want a majority enough that things will be able to happen, but I don't want it to be too radical. I've always been a fan of what is essentially European social democracy.
Yeah, which
I think is achievable here.
Yeah, yeah. Which is essentially like, if you're thinking in terms of left versus right and all that, that's the problem. I would be very much along those lines. But if you want the safety kind of thing, you end up with Fianna Fáil, like, because that's the
thing. But I just want center left, man. I want everything that's now. I want championing entrepreneurship. I want like business friendly policies, but all in the vein of investing back into society.
Investing back into society
all the time as the number one priority. Yeah. But I don't know why in modern society we just haven't been able to find a fair and effective way to get that investment back into society. You know, and
the worry is with somebody like Sinn Féin, well, that's what they're trying to paint it as, but like Mary Lou sitting down with the heads of Apple and Google and all that kind of stuff, would they be seen next to that brand? You know, everyone's been talking about that as well. It's just like,
well, the Americans won't care.
Yeah.
The Americans fucking love Sinn Féin.
Do they? But even the big corporations and all that kind of stuff, they wouldn't. They're trying to sell an angle,
fucking
basically.
Bill
that
Clinton
Google
can't be fucking hanging out with fucking Jerry Adams enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true. I came to Martin's funeral.
Yeah, you know. But anyway.
By the time the next time we do a podcast, this will all have been sorted.
Yeah, so we'll find out. I mean, I personally think I think either two things are going to happen. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are going to go into power with Sinn Féin, or Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are just going to join forces with like one other small party to keep Sinn Féin out. But for Sinn Féin, that's the best scenario, because they will become the genuine opposition. Like for the first time ever, Sinn Féin will be the lead opposition party, and they will grow as a result of that. At the same time, it may be a case of it'll be put to Sinn Féin, will you be the minority partner in this government?
They have no other choice. They don't have enough candidates to be a majority party.
They can't be the majority party. No. But the other two said they will not go into coalition with Sinn Féin.
I heard this from a lad in the Irish Times. His prediction on it is, although he said this on the day that it came out in the Sunday Times of Fianna Fáil, where like there's not a hope will ever go, but he thinks Fianna Fáil will bend and they'll go into coalition with Sinn Féin, because all the electricity, as he put it, is surrounding those two Republican parties, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin. So he thinks Fianna Fáil are going to bend, and that will be the coalition.
Interesting.
Fascinating. I am fascinated to see how
it goes. We'll see, man. It's an interesting election, you know? Mm. All right, well, that was great, man. Hour and 6 minutes, just like that.
Boom.
Going to get this up pretty quick, I think. I'll put it up first thing in the morning, Friday mornings. But I'm going to change the day if we if we start getting something going on the regular with the regular contributors, I think I don't know what day, but Friday's not the best day, like, you know.
Yeah, it's I think the only day is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, I know, but if fucking shift goes up on Tuesday, like, I'll fucking break my heart.
Break my fucking heart.
Break my heart, you know.
Monday not bad. I'm gonna try it out, but anyway,
I can't do fucking Monday, dude. I'm recording on it. Like, it's just gonna kill me, you know. It'll be Thursday, I'd say.
I need to wee.
Friday commute. All right, all fucking podcasts end with a wee. So, thanks to Steve. Thanks to you guys. Wonderful Friday. I hope you all have. As I said at the beginning of the episode, at Hello Stevo on Instagram, I'm at Des Bishop. Do leave a comment. If you listen on iTunes, 5 stars, leave a comment. If you listen on Spotify, do give a screenshot, maybe put it up on your Instagram story saying, really interesting chat with Steve and Des. If you didn't like it, just shut the fuck up. And we'll be back next week. If you listen to The Shift, we got a great episode with Jess Brennan coming up on Tuesday, as we also mentioned. And that's really it, guys. We'll chat to you next week. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.